11-year MLS pro Quincy Mariquois here, and you're now listening to The Perfect Soccer Podcast, where your host goes one-on-one to get to know your favorite professional soccer players, both on and off the pitch. Because how better to learn what it takes to become a pro soccer player other than directly from pro soccer players? Today's episode is brought to you by PerfectSoccerSkills.com, the number one and only platform you'll ever need to connect with and learn from pro soccer players. Learn more and enter to win weekly soccer prizes, goals, balls, jerseys, player meet and greets, and more by heading over to PerfectSoccerSkills.com/PSTM to enter to win for free today. With that said, please enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Perfect Soccer Podcast. Our special guest today is Chelsea Washington. Chelsea, how's it going?
I'm great. How are you, Paul?
I'm good. I appreciate you coming on. Let's just go back in time a little bit. What's your first memory of playing soccer?
Oh, gosh. First memory. All I knew is that my older brother did it, and I wanted to do everything he did. So part of my childhood was spent in Naperville, Illinois. My mom signed me up for our church league. I was on a team with all boys. And I just remember falling in love with it and scoring a goal and sliding in the mud. And just, like, my mom knew from that moment, like, here we go. And definitely got ready for the ride. So,
awesome. Yeah, for sure. And then you went to high school in Texas, right?
I did, yeah. Born and raised in Dallas, right outside of Dallas in Carrollton. So my high school is Hebron High School. I went to.
Gotcha. And then, what was that like? What was your, like, I guess your youth career, like high school and, like the club teams you played for?
Yeah, I was super competitive. From a young age, I was definitely in that, youth specialization of sport, like at the heightened, I'd say, peak of that. It was super competitive. I played for a couple of different clubs across Dallas. And for those that don't know, and if you don't know, Dallas is a very competitive sports market in general, but definitely with when it comes to soccer. So I definitely juggled between club season and then stopping that for a couple months, play high school, and then going back to club and just kind of all year round. So high school in particular was super awesome because we won the first and still only state championship for girls soccer there my sophomore year. So that was a very cool experience. We're actually coming up on like the 10-year anniversary of that. Makes me feel old, but yeah, super great memories for sure.
Yeah, that's dope. And when did you start getting like offers for college?
I had a pretty unique journey through into college, I would say. I was definitely a late one, I think. I had a lot of teammates. I was playing on my club team, and the midfielders next to me were committed to places like, you know, University of Texas. Our forwards going to Stanford, and for a long time, I just felt like I wasn't getting my call. And that came with, you know, a lot of frustration, but I ended up changing clubs in the middle of high school, which for, young club soccer players can be kind of a scary thing because you're transitioning to a new coach right in the middle of like college, you know, offering season. So took that leap of faith and switched clubs. And the club I was with prior, I'd been with for years. And, I came across the school I went to right before my senior year in high school, which again is pretty late. I thought I had a Florida school lined up. They ended up pulling the rug out from underneath me when I thought it was going to be my time to commit. They said, I think we're going to go a different direction, and broke my heart. So I ended up, again, coming across the school I actually ended up at right before my senior year. Took one visit. It was up in a tiny town in Ohio. Coming from Dallas, I was like, I don't know, let's just try it out. It's really my only Division I offer at this point. And I took it, and super grateful for it. And I would not change it for the world, but it was definitely terrifying at the moment.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was just going to ask you, was Bowling Green your only Division I offer?
Yeah. In a nutshell, I had a couple others that were like, it was a prettier walk-on, pretty much, yeah. I would say. Like, it was like, you can come here, but we don't have any money left. And, you know, with my family situation at the time, it wasn't a fit. So for Bowling Green, it was definitely too good of an offer to pass up at that time in the college recruiting process. So I just jumped at it. And my mom was a little like, are you sure? And, you know, a lot of girls, this is like a thing that young soccer players have to fight in Dallas is like, it's, I guess it's pretty notorious for Texas, at least female athletes to want to come back home. Mm-hmm. And I always look everywhere outside of Texas. I knew I was independent enough to do that. And mm-hmm. so that definitely bit me in the butt in some of the college recruiting processes with some schools. But yeah, I would say Bowling Green was probably the most substantial one that I got at that time.
Yeah, for sure. And then overall, what was your experience like at Bowling Green on and off the pitch?
I definitely credit a lot of like my personal growth and just I went through a lot off the field. You know, I actually credit a lot of my athletic success to what was happening personally with me. I was going through a transitional time where, you know, I was really starting to come to terms with my sexuality. And I only mention that because that was such a catalyst for me athletically because, you know, I was navigating some things, you know, in my personal life that I really felt like were affecting me on the field. And once I kind of came to terms with that and understood what my life was going to look like and embraced that and stepped into this newer version of myself, it only translated on the field. So then I, you know, from my sophomore year, I'd say, and again, I didn't have the best first 2 years of Bowling Green. I wasn't getting a lot of playing time. I was far from home. I thought that, you know, all my teammates back from Texas were at like Stanford and whatever, like, why am I not playing at Bowling Green? Like what's happening? So I was pretty unhappy. And, I went through a pretty, I don't even know what I would really call it, but that off season between sophomore year and junior year is when I just decided that I wanted better. I wanted to be better. I wanted to prove everyone wrong. And I really just put my head down and did the work. And at the same time, I was going through that transitional process that I mentioned. So I came back my junior year and had a pretty great season, followed that with my senior season. But I would just say in a nutshell, again, I wouldn't change it for the world. It was a tiny town in Ohio, but you know, the relationships and the people that I met in that experience and chapter in my life was awesome. And I only look back at it with a lot of like pride and happy that it happened, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And you're being super humble because you were the offensive player of the year I believe, in your senior year. So that's awesome. And then you guys won two regular season titles and two MAC titles or tournament titles as well.
Yeah, we did. That was kind of a crazy transition. I walked in my freshman year, we had three wins. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely contributing to my homesickness, my overall, like, what on earth am I doing here? We don't even win. And I'm this far from home and it's cold. But yeah, I mean, I think I just, like I mentioned, I was in an environment where I felt like my back was against the wall. I had a new coach my sophomore year that didn't recruit me, which is always terrifying for a college athlete. And I just remember at first being like, I don't know if I would have decided to play. Like, I don't know if I would have come here to play for this guy. Like, I don't know if he would have recruited me. So figuring out that relationship was interesting. But it's funny looking back on it now because I still talk to him, you know, every once in a while. Like, he's a great, great human. And so, yeah, that process of winning those championships and building that culture, I think it was really great to see even when I left. They were still winning championships. And I think that was an awesome sign because I think it's really reflective of, you know, the impact that I wanted to make on that program. And I know that everyone else around me wanted to. So to kind of build out, you know, something that lasted even after I was there is something I'm super proud of as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's almost like, what do they say? Like everything meant to happen for a reason. So it seems like everything happened for a reason. Like you pretty much your first 2 years are blah and then your last 2 years are really good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
And then, I mean, knowing all this stuff that you just told me, like, did you ever think you would be a pro?
It didn't. The reality of that didn't really hit me until I was coming off that junior year. Very candidly, I started having conversations like, okay, I did just, you know, have a pretty great year in a Mid-American conference, but what is this going to look like if I do want to play after? Like, is everyone just going to say, well, you were in the MAC, like nobody cares, or do I need to think about transferring? Like, what do I need to do here to maybe get myself more exposure? And so those conversations definitely started to become a potential, you know, thing after my junior year. And so when I decided, you know, staying at Bowling Green and being the captain and wanting to like kind of put a bow on that career there happened, and I fully committed to that. I think my draft process was pretty interesting as well. I actually formulated my own highlight tape. I didn't have an agent at the time, and it's definitely progressed now, but back then it was kind of terrifying in that time, like literally just like 4 years ago, you'll have agents calling you, telling you to pay them a retainer, like right out of the gate, and then they'll find you a team. And I just felt like my path was maybe a little bit different. So I definitely bet on myself, I would say, in that time, and made my own highlight tape and put it out there. And then I was hearing a little bit of buzz at Orlando, starting to, you know, ask about me and watch my tape. And I will say that on draft day, I had the choice to go to, it was in Baltimore. I had the choice. I was already going to Baltimore the next day for that conference there. It was the All-American conference as well. So I was really fortunate enough to be named an academic All-American at Bowling Green, but I didn't know if I wanted to go for the draft because everyone was like, nobody's going to draft a year for Bowling Green. Like nobody cares. Like you're better off just going to Europe. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting on my couch and I knew the only team I knew that had any interest in me was Orlando. So when Orlando got to their very last pick out of 7, which was like pick number 30 out of 35 at the time, I was like, okay, it's this or nothing, obviously. And then my phone rang and it was a moment that I definitely won't ever forget, sitting on the couch in my mom's living room and just get a call from Orlando, Florida, telling me I've been selected. And yeah, it was the start of kind of a crazy few years. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And I mean, it's crazy to sound because like 30th overall in any other league is like amazing, obviously. there's not that many teams and picks. So, overall, you're 30 out of all the players in, you know, Division One. And I mean, if you want to count Division Two and Three, like that's crazy still.
Yeah, I do. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was definitely surreal. And like I said, the opportunities back then, it's great to see it's expanded into, you know, I don't know how many now, at least 50 plus the other one just a few weeks ago just had. But yeah, 34 or 36 total in mine, which definitely contributed to the, okay, nobody's picking you out of 36 people in the country. So that was really cool to be able to say that for sure.
Yeah. And what did it mean to you to be the first player drafted from Bowling Green too?
There's a lot of pride, to be honest. Like Bowling Green as a university and as a town, like I fell in love with it while I was there because of the community. So it was really awesome, you know, to go back for just, you know, I got drafted and then I went back for just a couple weeks trying to figure out my last semester because I had to report to camp. And just the love and support I had at that time is definitely sticks out to me the most out of my 4 years there, just because it was like, you know, it's such a small town and to be a recognizable face in a small town, it's kind of like a movie thing. So it was a very awesome feeling. And I have nothing but love for Bowling Green and for that, you know, program and everything that it gave me. So.
Yeah, that's cool. And then overall, what was your time like with Orlando Pride? I know your rookie season was during COVID. So I know that must have been a crazy, weird time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would honestly, you know, to be super candid with you, I played 3 years with my contract at Pride, and it was just I would probably say it was a roller coaster. You know, we had a lot of turnover in my 3 years. I played for several different coaches, went through a couple of different leadership changes from our presidents to our GMs to even an ownership change. So. To stay consistently through a program that changed, it was something that brought experiences that I'm super grateful for now. And it's also something that I think was really hard on me as an athlete. You know, it was really tough. I was trying to compete. I was trying to, you know, really earn my place in a locker room full of people like, you know, Marta and Alex Morgan and Sydney LaRue. And to go through a bunch of different voices, being told a bunch of different things when you're just trying to learn and absorb. It was a lot. And, you know, I just felt like I did everything in my power to get myself on the field. And I went over to Australia on a loan to try to like better myself. And so ultimately, when it came to the last year of my contract, it was definitely like a lot of pressure. Because at that sense, like, you know, in that time in the professional game, it's so much different. Like you're fighting for a job. Like your contract, you know that people are trying to come and take that. So it was a lot of pressure, and I ended up breaking my ankle the last few months left on my contract, and just where I was at personally and mentally, and then, you know, dealing with an injury that I never had to deal before. I just felt like it was best to take a step away from the game. And that was a very tough decision. And, you know, one that I always had in the back of my mind. It's just a temporary thing. We'll just see how it goes. But I think it was the best decision that I could have made. And if there's been anything I've been a really big advocate for, you know, any former players or current players or people that have reached out to me afterwards, it's been like, you know, as soon as you're doing something, and it might bring you happiness in one way of your life, but you're doing something and you're continuing to do that for the sake of doing it, and it doesn't bring you that same happiness, like, you have to be able to realize that and kind of check in with yourself and say, you know, is this still the best thing for me, or is it taking more away from me than I originally anticipated? So that's kind of where I got to, and ended up taking a step away. But I've been really grateful for, you know, my time away from the game as well.
Enjoy learning what it takes to become a better player from professional soccer players? Well, how would you like to work with professional players one-on-one? Now you can with Be Pro by Perfect Soccer. Head over to perfectsoccerskills.com/BEPRO to apply to work with our network of pro players today.
Yeah, for sure. So then tell me how you got to the point where you retired, and like, what are you up to now?
Yeah. So that injury happened, and I had a lot of conversations with my family, my friends, and you know, I know you see a lot of like athletes want to make a whole, you know, big deal about, you know, retiring. And it's been an interesting ride for me, just because I don't think I've ever really like closed that door completely. I've always left it within myself to say, if there was an opportunity that came again, that made sense, that, you know, added value to my life, I would consider that. But for the time being, I'm really happy with what I'm doing, and I'm really, you know, grateful for the new industry I've stepped into. So once my contract was up with Orlando, I moved over to Tampa with nothing lined up. My partner and I just love Tampa, so we moved over here. And I luckily fell into a position in the sports banking industry. So I now work for a sports M&A firm, and we essentially buy and sell pro sports teams. So we pair investors with sports related opportunities, and that can mean a lot of different things. But just to the general public, how we kind of, you know, pitched it is that, you know, with ownership groups and major league minority owners, and like, you know, NBA, NFL, NHL, MLS, they have minority owners in their groups. And we work within the market to kind of buy and sell those pieces of teams. So it's a very confidential, quiet process, but we work with a lot of owners who hire us who want to sell their pieces, and we find them investors to buy them. Or we also work with just really high net worth individuals who hire us that have the capital, don't have the time to put their money in the sports. And so it's been really interesting learning about this side of the field, you know, on the sports business side, but I've definitely fallen in love with this side of it, and it's been awesome. And, you know, there's definitely been, you know, my network has been growing, and the people I've been connecting with has been awesome. So I'm definitely super into this industry right now. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's dope. I know sometimes like it can be hard for people too to transition out of sports. Yeah. And, I mean, you're staying in sports, but in sports business. So it's cool to hear and see. These next questions are some Quincy questions. I'm gonna give you options to answer them in a business way or a soccer way, since you're in your post career. So, what do you think the most important quality or skill made you successful either as a pro or now in business?
I would say this probably goes for both, and it might sound a little cliche, but discipline for sure. I think that I've just, you know, coming out of I was actually just speaking with a former athlete about this the other day, is when you are as an athlete and you're so used to operating in a high performance environment, you're around high performing individuals that just think like you and do things, and they don't question, you know, waking up at 6 a.m. and doing that workout. Like, you don't really have an option to do it. When you get into the workforce and you start to talk to like everyday people, you know, you start to see like, wow, that's just not like a common trait with a lot of people. Like, that's a special thing. So That's been really cool to see how that transitions into my job now. And just, again, everyday life of just having that discipline. And, you know, maybe now that I have like an office job per se, still making myself get up at 6 a.m. to do that workout because I know that I'll thank myself later for it. So discipline has been a huge one for me.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be more soccer related. What's the biggest mistake you think pro players are making?
Ooh. I would say one thing that I was fortunate to do, and I only played 3 years, but this was something I was really highly concentrated on at the time. Not really allowing themselves the headspace to contemplate the after. I think that when you're in it, you want to be like so in it, which is great. But at the same time, there's going to be, you know, a day where you're going to have to hang up the boots, the you know, cleats, whatever your sport is. And the earlier you can kind of like start to cope with that, the better. The earlier that you can start to, you know, really accept that, I think it's better. I think the athletes that are thrown into a life of, oh my God, what now? And they've never known themselves outside of their identity as an athlete, they struggle. And that comes with a lot of like internal conflict. And that's something that I've always kind of, you know, had this innate entrepreneurial mindset where even when I was playing, I always wanted to do other things and fill my brain with other things. And what does this mean? And how can I get involved in this? So I definitely think, you know, females might see that is a little bit easier just because we've always had such limited opportunities anyway, that people have always kind of been like, you can be a pro athlete, but, you know, there's not a lot of opportunities. So make sure you're thinking about, you know, this as well. Whereas I feel like on the men's side, you know, that's that or nothing. And they haven't really thought about, you know, anything else. And so I would say, you know, being able to have that awareness and be able to, you know, separate your identity from your sport.
Yeah, for sure. what advice would you give a young player?
I would say a big theme of my athletic success was just kind of, you know, trusting myself. And I don't mean that in like a, you know, egocentric way or, you know, don't listen to other people, but I think that we all have like a power within us that it's on us to be able to hone in on that and then bring that out in the right ways. And that's something I've really relied on in my life, is you can always fill yourself, you know, your own head with all different, you know, opinions and what everyone else thinks. But at the end of the day, like it's your life. It's what you want to do. And sometimes it might not make sense to other people, but if it makes you happy and, you know, if it's how you need to operate to do whatever, to be successful, whatever, like we're this time on earth is too short to worry about what everybody else is doing. So I think these days we're seeing a lot with social media and the comparison factor and just, you know, as little as you can pay attention to everybody else and more on yourself and what works for you, I think is huge.
Yeah, for sure. Are you still passionate about soccer?
Very much so. Yeah, I still watch it. I'm still a huge advocate for it. You know, one thing that I love that I've been able to do in my position now in the sports banking industry is within my firm, you know, I'm in charge of our kind of just facilitating women's sports conversations and utilizing my network to, you know, find pieces of women's sports teams and teams that might need, you know, extra capital, extra equity needs. And, you know, this is the perfect time for it. Everybody wants to talk about it, but now we're starting to see people put money where their mouth is. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to have those conversations, really hear about the excitement that people have about women's sports. And yeah, I think for me, I feel that I'm able to make more of an impact in that avenue than I ever was on the field. And I think that's definitely contributed a lot to my passion in this industry, because I feel like I'm still able to give back to the game, even though I'm not really a player anymore.
Yeah, definitely. These last two Quincy questions can be either soccer related or life related, whichever way you want to take it.
Cool.
What is something most people think is true that you believe isn't?
Ooh.
Yeah, these ones.
That is a good one. most people think it's true, but I don't. Oh, that's tough. I would say, well, I guess the most recent thing, like the first thing that came to my head with this is that like, I think that people are starting to believe because of this, you know, I definitely say TikTok probably contributes to this the most, but people think that there's like this new like shortcut to like fame or fortune or success. Like people are seeing like, oh, here's my highway. Let me just make TikToks. And it does work. Don't get me wrong. Like it works for some people, but it does give off this negative, you know, connotation of like, oh, success is just like a few clicks away. It's a few, you know, this is going to bring me happiness. And I think that so many people are seeing this work for a few individuals. And because it's just a few individuals, but they're like us as consumers, we see it as like the norm. Then I think a lot of people are starting to believe this false narrative of like, oh, it's just that. That's all I have to do. And I think for me, only being, you know, 26, I'm finding that when I'm in conversations with like 19-year-olds, I'm like, oh my God, why are you making me feel like I'm in my 40s when I'm just like 7 years older than you? But they just have this totally different way of kind of perceiving, you know, maybe what success actually means and what it actually looks like, and that it is really mundane, that it is really day-to-day crap you don't want to do to get to this position. I would say that that's kind of a false thing. And I wouldn't say like everybody believes it, and I don't, but I do think there's a good amount of people out there that have this false idea about it. And it's frustrating, I think, to see for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe even like with people that are content creators, I don't think they realize, like, even though they might act dumb, they're actually like pretty smart and they know what they're doing on the back end, and they have a team of people editing everything and perfectly, precisely doing cuts and different things to make the views go up and the algorithms make their do them things and things
like that. Definitely.
Yeah. So I don't think they realize that part of it on the back.
Yeah, definitely not.
What is something you would move forward with if you weren't scared of what would happen if things didn't go well?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think for me, I've always been, I can get a little bit too ambitious. Like, I can see something and again, I think it goes back to just the ability of really trusting myself and trying to leave my mark on the world. I guess it sounds so like cliche when I put it that way, but I think for me, I've been in a position where, you have to learn, you have to kind of, when you're young, you have to fill your brain and connect with the right people to, you know, get yourself to where you want to be. So I wouldn't say that I'm scared to do this. I would say that sometimes I think that I might be overshooting it. I don't think I'm in a place to like go and run my own business right now per se, but I think that if I was, you know, in a perfect world, I would kind of, you know, be at the helm of something. I don't know what, and I actually think about this like all the time, but I just know that my personality and my traits and what I'm able to want to contribute to the sports industry, I would like be a CEO of my own business one day. And it sounds silly just saying that out loud, but I just think that, like, you know, if I really had no F's given and wanted to just do whatever I wanted to do, I would probably have had some business by now that I own, that I run, that I'm doing. And I couldn't even tell you what that looks like right now. I just know that, like, from my own ambition, that's what I want. That's what I want to be doing. But in reality, like, I just stepped into this new industry. I mean, I've just transitioned from being an athlete my whole life. Like, I have a lot to learn, and but I think that if I wasn't terrified, if I thought I knew everything, that's probably something I would do way too prematurely. But
No, that makes sense. I feel like that's what a lot of people kind of say for that answer. All right, ready for a couple of fun questions?
Let's do it.
All right, Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi. As a midfielder my whole life, Messi. It's undeniable what he can do at the ball, with ball on his feet.
All right. Who would you want to do a jersey exchange? Just give me one male player, one female player.
Male player, I would do. Oh, that's tough. Oh, there's so many. I would say Sonny from Tottenham. He's my favorite. That's my favorite team. And then women's, and I don't want to sound this way, but I was fortunate to play with some of the best in the world. But if I had to have a jersey of anybody that I was fortunate enough to play with hanging up in our, in my apartment here, it would probably be just the jersey from my girl, Sydney LaRue. She was awesome, awesome teammate, awesome person. And, I love her to death. Lucky enough to call her, you know, a former teammate. So definitely Sid.
That's awesome. You didn't get to get one of her jerseys?
No, but you know, one time she roped me into accident. Like she didn't really paint it this way, but she was like, hey, you know, if you and Courtney was my roommate at the time, we're two rookies. She was like, if you guys have some time, like I have the storage unit, I need some help with. I'm like, Sailor's asked me to do her storage unit. Like, absolutely. Oh my God. It was a whole day's work of like in the beating Florida sun, but I got to see all these framed jerseys that she had in the storage unit of like the first one she wore back after her pregnancy and, you know, our first national team cap and all of these awesome things. And I'm like, that is so sick. But no, they did not really give out jerseys. We had to be super selective with like our jerseys. And we maybe got like three after each season. And, you know, I just never got to the point. So if she sees this by chance, I'll tell her to send me one. That's for sure.
Yeah. All right. Last one. What's your favorite cheat meal?
Pizza. I gotta go pizza all day. What's yours?
Yeah, probably pizza. I'm from Connecticut, and we have the best pizza, not New York.
You guys have the best pizza. You can look it up. I don't think I've had Connecticut pizza.
It's a fact. You can look it up.
Okay. All right. I'll have to take you up on that sometime.
But it's funny because like, awesome. If you ever looked at my Twitter and you search my name and put pizza, you'll see like it's just like a war. But yeah.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well,
I appreciate you coming on, and could you let the listeners know where they could follow you on social media?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I'm on Instagram. I think it's Chels_Washington. I should know that. And then I have a Twitter I'm not too active on, but those are probably my two biggest platforms. So.
Quincy Mariqua here, and thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to share it with someone you feel will get some value from it. And if you could take a moment to leave a review of our podcast wherever you're listening and let us know who you'd like us to interview next, we'll get working on that right away. You can listen to this full episode and more at perfectsoccerskills.com/radio. That's perfectsoccerskills.com/RADIO. You can also enter to win free weekly soccer prizes, goals, balls, jerseys, player meet and greets, and more by heading over to perfectsoccerskills.com/PSTM to enter to win for free today.